Summer wrap up, a fall winter preview, and a complete abandonment of the Gregorian calendar. This is Stone and Redbeard, Volume 4. All right, well, welcome back. This is Redbeard.
This is Stone.
And we're here to talk about we've been gone for a little while.
A little too long, yeah.
We take these breaks apparently because that's what we like to do.
Not scheduled, but
our lives are busy, very busy. We're students. We're busy people. On the go. But unfortunately, that keeps us from doing a lot of shows all the time. But we're working on it. We're gonna get better at this. We're getting more regular schedules, I think, or something.
Settle into the fall schedule for school and work and stuff. So it should be more regular. So be ready.
Right now we have like podcast IBS. You know, we give you a lot and we give it to you, but you're constipated without us.
Yeah. So if this goes longer than an hour, we apologize. But we haven't talked in 2 months.
We're gonna work on that though. Yeah. We're shooting for a 37-minute runtime tonight.
Yeah, bullshit.
I don't know if it's going to happen, whatever.
No fucking way.
Anyway, so yeah, let's wrap up this this summer action. I was telling Stone here before the show that I think it's strange. I was really stoked about the summer of 2015 for a lot of years. I was talking about it, all the movies that were coming out. And I saw it as like, it was like a disaster movie. It was like the perfect storm of every movie that could be big. And now that the summer has come and gone, I realized that it was really this year that's just a big year. The summer was a little anticlimactic, I gotta say. I missed a lot more summer movies than I would, even though maybe I was busier than most summers. I missed a lot more movies than I normally would miss, and I don't understand how that happened. There were only a few standouts for me. I gotta say that Chris is actually gonna talk about one of my favorites too, but Mad Max was pretty amazing to see, especially considering that I have no attachment to the originals, and from what I hear, even from people who are fans, that I shouldn't even watch them now. So it's such a different thing to see a movie like that come out of something that the original source material maybe wasn't even, like, it didn't even justify there being a sequel. And then to have it be one of the coolest looking summer action movies I've seen in a long time, that was pretty cool. Inside Out, Pixar still amazes me. Even though they don't always blow my mind, Inside Out was definitely one of those cases where my mind was blown again after maybe some underwhelming performances on their part of the last few years here. And Chris, what were your faves this summer?
Well, my two were definitely Jurassic World. It hit all the nostalgia bugs within the film. Great special effects, cinematography. Mm-hmm. Just couldn't go wrong. And it's now the number three highest grossed film of all time. So obviously it did fairly well in the box office, and there is going to be a sequel.
Yes.
So we'll see. They have said it's going to be completely different and take it to the next level. We'll see. I don't know where they really want to go with that, but hopefully it's not Jurassic Park.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that probably.
We'll in a few years, we'll talk about that.
It's weird the direction that they are talking about. Yeah. So we'll have to see.
And then the other one for me is Straight Outta Compton. I saw it. I grew up on that kind of music. I am the whitest person you'll ever meet, but I did grow up on rap in the...
He's literally an albino sitting here. Like,
I'm not that bad unless I take my shirt off or anything. But he might need sunglasses.
Yeah. It's like I'm doing the podcast with a guy from Powder.
Oh, come on.
You've never seen that.
Not that bad, but close.
No.
But
but he is wearing a Jurassic Park t-shirt.
Yeah, I am. I thought it was appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Straight Outta Compton. Like I said, grew up on that type of music. NWA's first album was my second CD I ever owned. The first being MC Hammer, but we won't go there. I just like the film. I know it's a lot of people have come out and said it's not accurate, and they left a lot of stuff out, you know, domestic violence and... You know, Suge Knight's court troubles and some
Which
other
is
things.
Sad.
And
you know, it's frustrating because you know, I didn't see it yet. I want to see it. I just didn't get a chance to. And I think it's strange though that they would leave some of that stuff out. And I don't know if it's because Ice Cube and Dr. Dre were involved.
It's probably because they were directly involved in it and they were helping, you know, guiding it. And so they're not making themselves out to be the bad guys.
Sure,
they make themselves look like badasses. Like, we grew up in the hood. This is where we came from. But you know, we grew up and we're not. You know, so terrible of people, but I enjoyed it. A lot of seeing the guys who played the people they were supposed to play, they picked great actors to portray them.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a good film. I enjoyed it.
Well, I look forward to seeing it. I won't be able to get to theaters, unfortunately. But
But a couple of bombs. Well, the Fantastic Four movie was a huge bomb for this summer.
Yeah.
They have already said that 2 is going to happen.
Yep. Which cast is so weird.
The cast is coming back. They have committed to not making it suck. So we'll see how they go.
So this is an interesting story, I think, because there's a lot going on here. We have a studio that for years has held on to the rights to a number of Marvel properties.
Yes.
20th Century Fox, and they have their claws literally in things like Wolverine. They're just bludgeoning. Every time they put out a Wolverine movie, it's just suck. I'm sorry, it just sucks.
They've screwed up the best Wolverine story arc possible.
And really, the problem for me has always been that Wolverine is great in the X-Men because you can only handle so much Wolverine. When you put him on his own, there aren't the X-Men and women, frankly, that are holding him back from being an asshole all the time and doing stupid shit. Mm-hmm. Wolverine is an impulsive guy, and he constantly meets his limitations in the movies, which is frustrating. Mm-hmm. And he constantly just kind of looks like a dumb brute when he's on his own. And so 20th Century Fox is a studio that is notorious for stepping in on directors as well and causing them to change their films. And in fact, when we talk about a director later on, 20th Century Fox has had a good relationship with him overall, but his first film was Alien 3, and they had a lot of involvement in that caused him to feel like it wasn't even his own film anymore. This is what was going on with Josh Trank. Josh Trank is the director of Chronicle, which was one of the best superhero films I've ever seen, to be honest with you. It's such a cool concept of what if you just develop superpowers one day, and it's all filmed through camcorder and everything like that. The special effects are pretty spot on. It showed a lot of promise for a young director. I remember coming out of the theater there for the first time where I thought to myself, I want to fly. I feel like I can fly if I needed to. Mm-hmm. But then these rumors started surfacing during the filming of Fantastic Four that he had trashed some rented house that they had for him in Louisiana, that he had these dogs that did like $25,000 in damage while he was living there, or $5,000 or $20,000, who cares? If your dogs do more than like $100 in damage, you're just being an asshole anymore.
Yeah.
And that he was hard to work with and blah, blah, blah. Who's in the right? Josh Trank took to Twitter at a certain point, you know, trash mouthed the studio basically, and then he had that Twitter poll, or he polled it, or whatever. As far as I can tell, his career is over. He has nothing on the horizon. Fantastic Four is the 2015 end. There was rumors of a Chronicle 2 at one point, but I don't see him even remotely involved in that, and I have a feeling that he's somewhere in the corner just crying and feeling very upset. And I'm sorry for that, because it sounds like he might be just a troubled talent, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But either way, this is a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
And Marvel stepping in now and helping 20th Century Fox with...
Helping Sony with Spider-Man. Yeah.
20th Century Fox needs to get their shit together.
Well, the writer-producer, Simon Kinberg, is the one who said that he's trying to make it the second one not suck. The second Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Because he feels that the cast that they have can produce a good film. Rumblings within 20th Century Fox that this last film lost them so much money.
Yep.
It might not be worth it to hold on to the franchise.
At all.
Yeah, at all. They might.
It's a
waste.
It
could go back to Marvel. Or give Marvel control. Give Marvel more input.
They've milked.
Like Sony's done.
Comics work. You can't. I'm sorry, but I don't see that we're going to make a movie out of every Marvel or DC property because at the end of the day, not every one of them is going to translate well to film.
Right.
And you really don't need a Fantastic Four series when you got an X-Men. Like, I'm sorry. Fantastic Four have one discernible villain, as far as I'm concerned. And it's Doctor Doom. And they're always going to meet Doctor Doom. They have to fight him. And after him, they're going to have to fight the Silver Surfer and hang out with him.
Galactus.
Yeah. And that's it. And they've already done that. And it's like, they did it fine. It wasn't great, but I don't know that it can translate all that well. It's a silver fucking surfer.
Yeah.
So anyways, I'm just saying, between them fucking up Wolverine, every time they make a Wolverine, they talk about making another one. Oh, but we promised it's going to be good this time. That's like, it's like they're saying that because they know they fuck it up. They've already sunk the Gambit movie, but does anybody really want to see that except for Channing Tatum? I don't know. I'm not sure that he could, that character could carry a good movie.
I don't know. I like the character, but I don't see him as a standalone. Yeah. He doesn't bring enough that I want to see a full movie on him. I mean, the characters that deserve a full movie are Wolverine.
Yeah.
You would say Days of Future Past is targeted at Professor X, Xavier.
Now, that's see, kind I like of his, those.
Well, those I no, I thought those were good.
Yeah,
but
those are the 20th Century Fox property that's actually working. But that's Bryan Singer doing that. Yeah.
And then, I mean, obviously.
And Matthew Vaughn.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Cyclops.
Right.
He could probably get his own film. Maybe. But I don't think the actor that they have who plays him in the X-Men films is strong enough to hold his own.
He's
much better as a playoff other type movie.
Right.
Jean Grey could, but you'd have to involve other cast members.
Yeah.
The one that
but
I
if
think
they're keeping with, unless they start rebooting shit, which they don't need to do. But they've done enough with the canon of Jean Grey in the movie so far. I think they can leave that alone.
I think an interesting one could be Storm.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jubilee would be the two that I could see. Mm. As possible.
And wasn't there a Magneto on the horizon? They never made that, right?
No, they never made a standalone Magneto.
Because that was one. That was an X-Men Origins, I heard, that they were working.
That was when the first Wolverine one flopped. A lot of stuff for 20th Century got put on the back burner. Like, for example, Deadpool was rumored after for so many years.
Because it was
and
such
then,
a disaster to look at in Wolverine. Yeah, I see nothing on Magneto.
Yeah, I think that one's been canned. But because X-Men Origins Wolverine flopped so bad and was just atrocity, they canceled a lot of projects.
Yeah.
But luckily, some footage, test footage came out for Deadpool, and that got revived and got made. So
yeah, and it looks like it's going to be pretty amazing. So
look
for that. Yeah. All right, well, that wraps up summer 2015 for us, pretty much. We'd say the big winners were Jurassic World, obviously, Mad Max, Inside Out, Straight Outta Compton wrapped up the summer nicely, and we just had a lot of flubs, flops, and otherwise unimportant-looking movies.
Yeah.
A couple ones that I missed that I really did want to see were Ant-Man and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
They did well enough.
They got good reviews, and I, you know, I would still like to go see them in theaters. I just, you know, we'll see if I have the time.
Yeah.
Anyways, so now that we've already gone to the fall, there's some interesting news coming out.
Forgot one. I saw Minions.
Oh, that's right.
Saw Minions. Funny. Definitely would put it third of the three films. I thought Sandra Bullock and Jon Hamm were amazing in it. I thought they probably should have played more of a role. Just because it's hard when a character doesn't speak. Mm. And the Minions don't speak. They almost played them off as Three Stooges, almost. Like, there was definitely a leader of the three, and then the other two were kind of had their own personalities, but were definitely different than the leader of the Minions. But I love Jon Hamm's character. I thought he was brilliant in it. He was the British inventor to Scarlett's, Sandra Bullock's characters. Like, they were married.
Mm.
And definitely enjoyed that dynamic. That wasn't nearly enough of them, I don't think, in the film.
Hmm.
Pretty much had to have a narrator for most of the film just because the Minions were the main
character.
They were much better as sidekicks.
Like supporting characters,
Supporting characters, background. I mean, their comedy definitely targets that kind of role. They don't need to be in the front. They are the, you know, the slapstick comedy, the physical comedy, like falling down the stairs, and that kind of stuff.
The cutesy things.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, if they would have put more focus...
Grandma loves the Minions, but you haven't seen Minions yet, right? No.
No. Yeah. I enjoyed the movie. I'm not going to say it's bad. I thought it was good. I thought it was funny. I took my nephews to it. They laughed.
What rating? Letter
grade? Probably a solid B.
Solid B.
Okay. Yeah. I would say the other Minions are probably... Despicable Me movies are B plus A minuses.
Okay.
I could see the first one all the time. Not that I'd go out and see it, but if it was on, I wouldn't change the channel kind of thing.
Right.
But Minions, solid, funny, had some good moments, but just not as good as the first two. Just because it was just hard for the Minions to play out their own movie.
Right.
So that does wrap up summer. Yeah, yeah. That does wrap up summer. I forgot to interject that on there.
And so now we're going to move into what's going on in the future. We got some news. Actually, what's going on right now, which is kind of interesting, is M. Night Shyamalan is having this little, like, blip of a comeback, supposedly. But it's really strange because we can't tell if it's a real thing or if it's actually just hype that's being fueled maybe by M. Night Shyamalan.
But just by his name alone, yeah.
Because he's got this movie called The Visit, and it's about these two little kids that go to visit their grandparents, but grandma and grandpa are... They're trying to kill them the whole time. It's got some twist ending, which he's been known for over the years. Now, I was going to do a director's chair on... it's a new segment we got coming out this week, and I was going to do a director's chair on M. Night Shyamalan, and Chris pretty much said he didn't want to watch those movies because he doesn't like them. And so I know I am part of the unpopular opinion group on M. Night Shyamalan because I stuck with him all the way through Lady in the Water. It wasn't until he made The Happening that I just burned all my...
Finally called it quits?
Yeah, I burned all my M. Night Shyamalan posters.
See, mine ended after Unbreakable.
I just rewatched Signs recently, and that's one of my favorite movies. So, Grandma, what do you think of Signs? That spooked you out a bit. The one with Mel Gibson where he was an alien.
The aliens were killed by water or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Signs, I gave it a B.
Oh, she gave it a B.
A B. Okay. I'd give it an F.
Oh, wow.
Maybe not an F.
Now,
I like
The Village, but these aren't movies that I think are great. Like, I would say, The Sixth Sense, the first time I watched it, was a solid A. Because it not only is it a mind-blowing film, but... I mean, mind-blowing in the twist when you're, you know, never seen it and weren't quite expecting anything like that. But it's a well-made film all around, I think. I think it has rewatchability, but even though it has a twist, it, you know, that loses it a bit over time. But
I'd say rewatchability. With that twist, it's hard to...
But it's still good. I don't know. Like, for me,
If you put years between viewings, I would say yeah.
Yeah. I still say it's an A-minus movie, although I haven't seen it in a while, so maybe I'm going to rewatch it. I feel the same way about Unbreakable and Signs. I'd say The Village is like a B movie. I would say Lady in the Water. I really liked that in the time I saw it, but I'd say it's probably a B+. And then I saw The Happening. That was an F for me. I didn't see The Last Airbender, and there was one other one that he did.
Devil.
Oh, Devil. He didn't direct that, though.
No.
He produced that.
No, he wrote it.
He wrote it. That's right. So anyways, there was After Earth with Will Smith. Yeah,
that was a bomb.
Yeah, that bombed. See, there was a time where he was a big... I mean, his first three movies made like $1 billion worldwide. He was big. And then he was doing that show Wayward Pines on TV. And I don't even... Is that still on, Grandma? Did that get canceled?
Pardon?
Wayward Pines?
He only directed one episode of that.
On the first year. I don't know if they're going to bring it back.
Well, anyways, he's producing that and he's big into that and whatever. But,
yeah.
So... M. Night Shyamalan, what the fuck? I don't know what happened to that guy. I used to have a lot more respect about him. And now, the odd thing is, I'm hearing this buzz generator off The Visit, and yet I'm actually hearing that it's not any good.
Yeah. I mean, it's made a ton of money, because the budget was so low. The budget was only $5 million, and it's made worldwide $53 million. So, the studio made their money back.
And then some.
And a ton more. But, its Metacritic score is terrible.
Yeah.
It's... IMDb score is terrible.
Yeah.
So...
Which that would be, you know, it'd be funny, you know, a horror movie, I would expect a great disparity. I would expect that there would be a high fan score, or relatively high, and a low Metacritic score. Because that makes sense. Critics aren't going to like a trashier film. Well, moving on, M. Night Shyamalan, you guys will just have to let us know what you think about that. But let's see, we also got some news. Prometheus 2, the sequel to the... The sequel to the reboot/prequel of the Alien films, directed by the director who directed the original Alien film.
Ridley Scott.
Ridley Scott came out a few years ago to a lot of debate, actually. A lot of people not sure if they liked it. Ultimately, let's see what kind of rating it's got these days. But ultimately... There was a lot of contention as far as, you know, in 2012, whether that was a good movie. Noomi Rapace, who, you know, she's all right. She was in the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Mm-hmm. 7 on IMDb, 65 Metacritic, so it's not...
So, yeah, that's pretty good. It's not bad. 65 is in the green on Metascore.
Yeah.
Or Metacritic, and that's it, you know, average, or generally average favorable reviews. Yeah. It had what people thought were plot holes, and generally I feel they weren't plot holes. I feel we just don't know a lot of it.
Yeah, we discussed this before the podcast, and we're both actually fans of the film. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good story. I thought the special effects were good. I thought it played well.
Yes. I will say the special effects were some of the most flawless special effects. And I am not a big fan of Ridley Scott, actually. Oddly enough, I liked more of his brother's films than I ever liked Ridley Scott's film. I feel like Ridley Scott is a bit long-winded. He has trouble editing his films. And although like there's still films of his I like, there's a lot more that kind of irk me. But Prometheus... I thought it was well done and just beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
Just a just gorgeous film.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to what they're going to do, but it's interesting that they're supposed to be tying this back in, and even though this isn't really supposed to be an alien movie, it's now
an alien movie.
Alien Paradise Lost. And it's like, huh, weird.
And so, they're having a Ripley tie-in.
Yeah.
They're going to be connecting the alien universe with Ridley.
Yeah.
So, Ripley. Pardon me.
Yeah, so I don't know. This is going to be interesting. And what's odd, like I said, is that going into this, you know, Prometheus was successful, but it wasn't some massive, it wasn't some juggernaut of a film.
No.
So, for them to be making a sequel and really starting to capitalize on the Alien Paradise Lost bit, that, you know, that's significant for them to be making that name. And first one was great because it's classic. The second one was excellent because it was this like action film. But then the third and fourth were like the Godfather 3 of silence or sci-fi films.
You know, like, 3 definitely was.
Yep.
3 and 4 were definitely not good. 1 and 2 were good. 2 was definitely the best. I mean, I personally like 2 the best. I mean, Bill Paxton.
Yeah. Well, Sigourney it was more Weaver. Of an action film. It was the kind of movie it needed to be.
Yeah.
The first one is more of the philosophical, and like I said, the Ridley Scott, long-winded, you know, but still a well-made film. So, moving on.
Pacific Rim 2. So, a few weeks ago, Legendary Pictures said that it is officially on the back burner, and they are not going to be making this film at this time. Guillermo del Toro this week came out and said quite the opposite, that he is turning in a screenplay and a production budget too Legendary to make this film. Now, the first film took years to get greenlit. He fought, it seems like almost a decade to get this film made. And so, in Del Toro's mind, this film is still getting made, whether or not Legendary wants to do it or not, it seems like. But I loved the first film. I'm a sucker for giant mech and kaiju movies. I'm happy to see that he still wants to make it, and that he's not letting it drift to the back burner, even though Legendary kind of is. It made enough money that it should warrant a sequel, and it was popular enough, especially not in just the U.S. market, but overseas market.
Yeah,
it did well in the international
overseas,
market. We're seeing such a growth in the Chinese market as far as movie going that a lot of movies are actually editing their movies to please those kinds of audiences.
Yeah, like the Transformer movies.
Right. So I don't see why this movie doesn't get made. It might take him fighting a bit more. Maybe success of Crimson Peak, which is coming out shortly, which we'll talk about later, might help spur along the sequel getting made.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, he's a pretty powerful player in Hollywood now with the success of some of his films.
Yes.
Even though they're more obscure, he's a more obscure director. You know, he's done well enough. You know, it'll be interesting to see if he can get off the ground and get some other actors in it. I don't care if he makes another one. I don't want to see Charlie Hunnam in movies anymore. Somebody stop that. Sons of Anarchy kind of spoiled it for me. If he can't learn how to walk a different way when he's on a movie set... He's got a movie coming out, actually. What has he got that's coming up here that I'm just hoping he isn't screwed up? And I'm not trying to be mean to the guy. I just want him to stop walking like he's in a prison gang in the yard. You know what I mean? He always walks like that. Like he's in the Sons of Anarchy still.
Yeah.
And he's British.
Yeah. Well, he's in a King Arthur film, which is next year.
Okay.
And he's in The Lost City of Z, which is also next
year. Yes. And I'm looking forward to that because I love adventure films, and I'm just hoping he doesn't fuck it up by walking like that and trying to be this bravado badass guy that he just sometimes is too much for me.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens there. Now, a sequel that I'm kind of looking forward to, but still kind of curious how it's going to go, is this the talks of Bourne 5. And we're talking like a soon release date here.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested here because I remember when they finished the Bourne trilogy.
Right.
And Bourne Ultimatum came out. The Bourne, in fact, I just watched the Bourne Identity with my girlfriend a couple weeks ago here. The second one, The Supremacy, was good, but Paul Greengrass hadn't quite found his footing in the action genre yet, I think. Maybe he just wasn't quite there yet. By the time they made Ultimatum, that is hands down one of the best action movies I've ever seen. Like, it's just such an intense action thriller, so well made, and such a great resolution to it, that I was happy with that being the last one. So are they beating a dead horse here, or am I just really excited to the possibility of seeing Jason Bourne coming back? And Matt Damon has shown that he can fluctuate his weight and how in shape he is, because when he made Elysium, he was ripped when he made Elysium.
Right.
And that was sad because it was such a waste because it was not a good movie, I think.
Yeah.
But anyways, but he was in great shape, so I guess it doesn't matter. Good for him. His health is good.
Yeah.
But so it's not to say that he's getting too old to do that, because I don't think he is. How much more can they milk out of it? I mean, where can they go with it? And some details that have come out this week are that it takes place 12 years in the future. I mean, not in the future from now, but basically takes place in present time 12 years after the events of the last film.
Mm-hmm.
And even though the Jeremy Rayner Bourne legacy is still part of the whole series, it's not, I think, very involved in this whole segment. So, Paul, I remember when they made the ultimatum, made Bourne Ultimatum, that Matt Damon made the ultimatum that he would not return unless Paul Greengrass returned to direct.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because I don't think that Doug Liman was probably very happy about that. Because he directed the first Bourne movie, and I bet you he was kind of butthurt. He's like, well, why didn't you want me back, Matt Damon? But oh well.
Yeah, well, I mean, him and Matt Damon and Paul Greengrass wrote the screenplay together.
Yep.
So Greengrass is going to direct it. They're bringing a couple new people into
film. Wait, Liman wrote the screenplay with them for the new
one? No.
Oh.
Greengrass and Damon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Bringing in Tommy Lee Jones. Julia Stiles is coming back.
Oh, Tommy Lee Jones.
And,
Pam Landy. What's her name? The actress. I always forget her name. Joan Allen?
She's not listed yet. They are currently filming, so their full roster of actors and actresses isn't out yet, so.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And now, so we'll see how that turns out when that comes out. I think that's next year, right? It's 2016?
Mm-hmm. Okay. July.
Next summer, yeah. Yep. That'll be a big
one. In July.
That'll be a big one. So another movie that we got some news on recently, which is really odd, is it Legendary Pictures that's doing this? Yeah, Skull Island. So it was either last year. No, it wasn't last year. I guess it was last year or the year before. There was at the San Diego Comic-Con, which we're privileged to be right here next to. It's pretty cool to drive down around there when it's happening. But they released a little teaser trailer, and it was something panning over an island, looked like in the South Pacific or whatever. And then coming down on the island, and as it got closer, you just see something like big running on the ground, and then it's obvious that it's King Kong, and then it cuts away, and there's no more information about it. There was no director at the time. There was no script. Nothing. They just had this spec trailer with an image, and it kind of made a lot of people scratch their heads. They didn't know where they're going with this.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to the reboot of Godzilla, which was, I'm sorry, it was horrible. It was fun to see Godzilla, but I'll never need to watch that again, and it was just not a good... I'm sorry.
They're making a Godzilla, too.
I know, and the screenplay could have been way better. They could have just actually written that shit well, and they just didn't. Either way, oddly enough, this movie trailer that they showed at the Comic-Con ended up being a teaser trailer for what is being called Skull Island. Or actually, I think it's called King Kong's,
Kong. Skull Island,
yeah,
yes.
Kong, colon...
Yeah. Skull Island.
Skull Island. And it basically is Kong on the island before they come and get him. So it's a pretty cool series.
Right.
And this is all going to somehow preface Godzilla versus King Kong movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Legendary Pictures owns the rights to both these characters and is preparing them.
Well, so here's what happened. Kong, which is under Legendary Pictures' rights. Godzilla is under Warner Brothers' rights. Legendary signed a 5-year agreement with Universal. So Legendary has sent Kong back. They're going to produce it under Warner Brothers so that they can then do King Kong versus Godzilla under the Warner Brothers banner instead of under Universal. So they left Warner Brothers, went to Universal, and is now taking Kong back to Warner Brothers so that they can make the King Kong versus Godzilla film, which is probably years away.
Yeah.
Because Godzilla 2 isn't set to release until 2018.
Oh, gosh.
So Godzilla versus King Kong will be after that.
Yeah.
So we're probably talking something in 2019 or 2020. So this is
World is going to be over in 2050, so they can only milk this for so long.
Yeah. We'll see. But it's interesting that a company that a production just left a major studio to another studio and is taking one of their films back just to get another film made. Kind of interesting. So it kind of shocked a lot of people, especially in the movie industry. So moving on to some casting news. We have been gone for quite a while, obviously. First go over, the Ghostbusters reboot has seen almost every major player is going to be doing a cameo within the reboot. What has come out is that the Ghostbuster reboot with the female cast under Peter Figg is in a completely different universe where the original Ghostbusters didn't even take place.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, I think.
Yeah. So Bill Murray, who has said that he will not be in any Ghostbusters film unless he died, supposedly, because he wanted to pass it on to a new generation, is doing a cameo in this reboot, but it is not as his role as a Ghostbuster. He is an actual cynic of the girls trying to disprove them.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting to see what the other characters, Ernie Hudson, Sigourney Weaver, are all doing cameos. Dan Aykroyd is doing a cameo. His role came out. He's a cab driver. The other two, their roles haven't been specified. So it'll be interesting to see. They will be in the movie, but they will not be playing their characters from the first two Ghostbusters.
Well, it's interesting, too, that this whole alternate universe approach, I still am not sure how I feel about the Star Trek series doing that. Mm-hmm. Although I've enjoyed those films, them blowing up Vulcan and shit like that has always been kind of weird for me, and they're slightly off from what the original movies were. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays off in the Ghostbusters if they get more comedy out of by joking about the differences, you know?
Yeah.
Because in Star Wars Star Trek, they don't even bring up the differences, you know?
Yeah, it's like that. It doesn't even exist. They don't know what design. A couple other just quick additions. Kristen Bell has been added to the Chips movie.
That's Kristen Bell, not Christian Bale.
Yeah, Kristen Bell. Yes, exactly. Rachel McAdams is going to be in Doctor Strange. This is news from quite a while ago, but she's been confirmed. Don't know exactly who she's going to be playing in the Doctor Strange movie. Obviously, Benedict Cumberbatch has been helmed to play Doctor Strange in that movie. Josh Gad is going to be playing Roger Ebert in the Russ and Roger film. Russ is being played by Will Ferrell.
That's a great casting.
Yeah. They look a lot alike, actually.
Yeah.
Especially the young Robert Ebert.
Mm-hmm.
But it's based on the tale of Roger Ebert, Peter Myers, sorry, getting a film made.
Russ Myers.
I don't know why I said Peter. It's Russ and Roger.
It's because you're drunk.
Nah, not quite. Them making the first X-rated film ever put out by a major studio, the Valley of the Dolls.
Have you seen that, Grandma?
What?
Valley of the Dolls?
Yeah, in fact, it was on the other night, and I was going to watch it. It was on 58.
Do you like it?
I wanted to see it again. I hadn't seen it for years.
Mm-hmm. So, it should be good.
It was a good movie at the time.
Yeah.
And then the last bit of news, something that hits home for me, obviously being a kid of the 80s, Ready Player One is being adapted to film by Steven Spielberg. He has now cast the first official member as Artemis, is going to be played by Olivia Cooke.
What has she been?
Most famous role was Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which was earlier this year. She also played in Ouija, the horror film, last year. She's done a few things. As far as the character goes, she could play the role. Maybe a little too pretty for the role, but obviously they're not going to play exactly to the role, but...
Well, it'll maybe launch her career being in a Spielberg film.
Yes. So I'm really excited for that film. We didn't talk about that. I haven't talked about that film at all yet. But I actually just finished reading the book itself. And being a kid of the 80s, it is all about 80s pop culture. Video games, movies, TV shows, music, books. If you get a chance, if you like... It's science fiction, not really science fiction. It's based in the future. Essentially, the world has been decimated by an energy crisis, which we could be seeing as well soon. But the video game, it's a video game that pretty much people start living their lives in, essentially. So they give up their real world to live in a fake world.
And that sounds like it'd be good special.
A virtual reality, like it's a complete immersion of virtual reality. So you put on a headset and gloves and you completely interact with a virtual world that is very lifelike. You feel like you're in the world that you're traveling in within this form. But the movie's about the inventor of the game dies and you have to solve his riddle to win his estate, essentially, because he had no heirs. So that's the whole plot of the game. But the inventor of the game was born in the 70s, so he grew up in the 80s. So the whole game is about figuring out the 80s pop culture stuff. Because the movie, or the book and the movie will take place...
Is coming out next year?
It is dated for 2017, so it's it's a year and a half away, probably.
I feel like I'm getting too old for this shit. They need to make these movies faster.
So, I'm looking forward to that movie just because I literally just finished the book. I was on a plane, and whenever I'm on a plane, I read books and finish that book on the plane ride. So, it was... I really enjoyed the book. Just the nostalgia for me, you know, talking about Galaga and arcades and Pac-Man. And
I'll have to read that.
Yeah. So, I enjoyed it. That rounds up the casting news for today. The next segment is No Hollywood Bad.
No Hollywood Bad.
Like you're about to smack him on the nose like a dog.
We need a newspaper sound.
So it's a new segment we're trying out. In this segment, we're going to discuss things, some news, rumors we might have heard that we think Hollywood should not do. And we're hoping that by talking about them, we're not making them happen. But
yeah,
let's put a stop to these things, Hollywood.
Fingers crossed.
Let's be mature, responsible adults about things here. And let's not remake The Crow.
Oh, all right. God.
I grew up in the 90s. I grew up in the 80s and the 90s. I was a 90s teenager, and The Crow was a big deal for me. I remember that movie coming out, and it shaped my persona in high school. I probably wore way too much black and way too much jewelry and had way too long of hair because of that movie. That movie inspired a lot of me. And the comic and all of it. I loved it. I had Crow t-shirts, Crow posters, Crow music, books, comics, movies. God, loved it. All right? They just don't need to remake it. They already tried to make sequels, which mostly sucked. Or were just carbon copies of the first, just with little tweaks here and there. And they just should stop now. Unless they're going to go badass, hardcore, back to the source material and really pay tribute to that. If I had a visionary director and I saw some real promise, then I could maybe bite into it. But there's just no reason at this point. All of the actors in the original really owned their characters. It was almost like the Tombstone of goth movies, you know? It was like everybody really performed well and did something more than just some crime drama, you know? It was a good movie. But whatever. I've also heard rumors of a Blade and Avengers crossover.
Well, this is Wesley Snipes just trying to milk whatever he can out of a character that he played years ago.
And I love the guy. You know what? I was so sad to hear he had to go to prison. That's horrible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't pay your taxes. You're going to prison.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
rough.
That's how they got...
Oh, I don't understand why they don't pay.
That's how they got gangsters back in the 30s.
I know. It's so weird. But anyways, he's out now and he's doing stuff, and I'm happy to see him back out there.
Yeah.
He's in great shape, I'm sure, still. Do we need another Blade movie? No. Did we need another one after the first one? No. The first one was fine. It was entertaining. I still watch it on occasion. Guillermo del Toro started to build his reputation off of directing the second Blade, and honestly, I never really cared for it. And when by the time they're bringing Ryan Reynolds in for the third one, I was like, can we bring him in to mop it up and shut it down?
Well, I mean, Jessica Biel was in that movie.
She was, but she just didn't save it, I feel like.
That movie wasn't very good.
They just didn't need to keep doing it, and so I was kind of glad when they stopped. And then they tried to make a TV show out of it, and blah, blah, blah. You know what? Just stop.
Yeah.
No, Hollywood. Then there's this little rumor floating around out there. I don't know, it's a rumor, I guess.
Well,
Hugh Jackman basically said.
He said he would make a good Wolverine. Yeah. When he we're referring to Tom Hardy.
He would pass the torch to Tom Hardy.
Yeah, because he's done. This is his last Wolverine film, or last film as Wolverine coming up. So,
sorry,
I mean, he's done seven films now as Wolverine, so...
I think it's 10.
Is it 10?
That many? I think he's done... I know he's done more than any other actor.
Wow, is it 10? Is that many?
Let's see.
The three Wolverine movies.
Well, the three original X-Men, the three Wolverine... Days of Future Past.
Oh, wow. It is almost 10.
And he'll be in Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And then the last Wolverine film will make about 10, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's ready to move on with the character. He said that, he said Tom Hardy would make a good Wolverine. I can see it. He would probably make a good Wolverine. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's where they need to go. I think if they were to reboot the franchise again, which... With comic movies, and as we see with Spider-Man, they just keep doing.
Yeah.
I think they should go a little more unknown. A little more... Hugh Jackman played a great Wolverine.
Yeah.
But he was not Wolverine. As far as translation of the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackman's a giant man. Mm-hmm. He's 6 foot, I think 3, listing. Wolverine's supposed to be 5'6". A tiny man who has Napoleon complex. Right. That's where his anger seems to stem from, is that he's a tiny man that, just... can take anybody out. The only one who beat him was, comic book lore, the only one who really ever beat him was Magneto, because Magneto took his adamantium off of his skeletal system. So,
it's not fair.
No, it's cheating.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's Magneto's power, so.
Yeah.
I like Tom Hardy. Great in the Batman movie. I just think they should go someplace else.
Yeah. How many iconic characters do you need to play in your lifetime?
Yeah.
Not everybody can be Harrison Ford. I love Tom Hardy. He's great. I've seen him in some great films. You got to play Bane. What is he going to be, Indiana Jones next?
Well, that's what they're doing with Chris Pratt. They're trying to give him every iconic role. It's he's supposed to play the next Indiana Jones. Right. And
this isn't a time, in a time where Clark Gable was making films that, would make how many millions at the box office, maybe. Now, granted, Gone with the Wind is, adjusted for inflation, the highest grossing film of all time. Yeah. But we're talking about 50 years worth of profit generation. I mean, far more than that. We're talking about, 70, 80 years of profit generation. So it makes sense, of course. But at the time when Clark Gable or somebody like that was making movies, they weren't making the kind of money that somebody like Chris Pratt is now making movies that are making. I mean, we're talking about Jurassic World being the number 3 movie. He's got Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
The year before was the second biggest movie and made tons of money that they were, kind of blown away by. So, this was like a little background character on Parks and Rec when I first started watching that show. And now he's this gigantor. So, basically, do we really need... I'm really looking forward to X-Men Apocalypse next year. And then I'm done with it for a little while. I am done with X-Men. You gotta let it go for a little bit,
Yeah.
Because they gotta shake things up now. The actors are getting too old. They've been doing it too many times. The stories are starting to not connect completely. It's time to let it go. It's time to go a different direction.
I think if you do... I don't know if the Batman length is enough. Is, might be too long of a time, but between the end of the Joel Schumacher and those atrocious Batmans with George Clooney and the length of time between the Christopher Nolan reboot, you might see something like that be able to revive the X-Men into a much better franchise,
right?
Because to be honest, the X-Men movies have been hit and miss.
Yeah.
There's been some great ones. Days of Future Past was great.
Yep.
The first X-Men was great.
Yep. First
two
class,
and three, and we're
class.
In the middle. We're kind of. Eh.
Oh,
so,
see, I really like two, three. Three I enjoyed, but I know a lot of people didn't.
Yeah. I would say, especially with Fox, they tend to screw up franchises. Mm-hmm. Just give them time. Give it five.
Yeah.
Now, granted, they have to make a movie every so often to keep the franchise. So
right.
I think it's 5 years. So wait that 5 years. Don't do anything until 5 years.
Right.
Let Apocalypse end.
Let it
and
rest.
Then just let it simmer. Mm-hmm. Just and figure out where you're going from there. Because
super, it's getting saturated. It's going to leave this massive vacuum when they all stop making movies for a little
and
bit. You know?
Spielberg recently came out and said he hopes superhero movies go away for a while. Which, you know, not to say that he's right, because he hasn't really done that type of movie. His movies are a little different, but I'm sure he's sick of seeing them, and he'd like to see more variety in, as far as films go. So
you can only take them so far for a little while. It's time to we're just going to start resting on our laurels here.
I just think the popularity and the profits that the studios were seeing, that they just, you know, Disney will milk any franchise they can.
Right.
I mean, so we'll see.
We shall see indeed. All right, well, moving on. We're going to move on to our segment, Desert Island Movies. This week I'm paying tribute to Rowdy Roddy Piper with my two choices. One of my all-time favorites, John Carpenter's They Live. And this movie, if you haven't seen it, it's just marvelous. Rowdy Roddy Piper plays plays like a transient construction worker guy, which was, oddly enough, a character he played more than once. Because my second film is called Welcome to Frogtown, also starring him. But anyways, in They Live, he plays this guy who's you know, works in construction, lives off the grid, and he gets a spot in this little homeless camp, lives there for a little bit, and one night he gets raided, and, like, pretty hardcore by some cops. And somewhere in that whole process, he stumbles on these sunglasses that are being distributed by this church across the street from the homeless camp. When he puts sunglasses on, he realizes that the world is being controlled by aliens who send out signals to subliminally blind us from this. Now, this film, oddly enough, is what inspired Shepard Smith and his very popular Obey campaign of graffiti art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a classic Carpenter. It's awesome. For Rowdy Roddy Piper has one of the most notorious fight scenes of all time between Roddy Piper and another character in the film in an alley where they just beat the crap out of each other for like 5 minutes straight.
Keith David,
yep,
yes.
Yep. And it's a great film. Anyways, another film that you definitely haven't seen, especially if you haven't seen They Live, a film called Welcome to Frogtown. It basically takes place in this future, like a nuclear fallout future, where Rowdy Roddy Piper plays this guy who has, like, super potent sperm. Apparently, the government tracks him down, and they figure out that his sperm,
super
that he sleeps around,
sperm.
And that he impregnates more women than the average guy. And they need him because there's this, like, nuclear uprising of frog people out in the desert. And so he has to, like, go through Frog Town or something like that because he's on his way to impregnate all these women. And it's just such a great B-rated sci-fi film. If you get your hands on it, oh man, you need to watch it.
Oh, man.
Oh, excuse me.
You have to be high to watch that one.
It helps. It helps. All right, moving on. Chris, what do you got for your choices?
So mine definitely are a little different. My first one is a movie called Jinro. It's an anime. Told you before in a couple of the earlier podcasts that I do dabble in anime and will be the anime expert for the show, even though I am by no means an expert.
Mm-hmm.
This film is... Obviously, the best way to watch it is in Japanese with subtitles. I know a lot of people have problems watching movies that way, but it's the voice acting is just so much better in Japanese. It's a movie based... you know, most animes are based on the future. It's... maybe not too far away in the future, but it's about a military police force who is tracking essentially terrorists. Been uprisings and riots and people revolting against the government. And it's an interesting take on what is perceived as a fallen or soldier who maybe doesn't believe in what he's fighting for type look. In the end, the movie twists and turns a little bit, and it is not a happy movie. It is very sombering and depressing, I guess you could say, by for the ending. I enjoy this film. I usually watch it at least once or twice a year. It's just one of those films that I don't know why I watch it all the time, but I enjoy it. The animation, that this film was made in 99, so it's a little bit older as far as animation goes. My other film is completely different. 1985, Val Kilmer and Real Genius. Love this film. It just is so funny. So many great prank, putting one of his college roommates' car in his room and cheating the vending machines with, you know, frozen ice. And
I gotta watch this. You know, I remember seeing it. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah. The professor, played by Will Atherton, who's trying to milk a new government like grant, I guess you could say. It's just a great film. Just one of those 80s films that's hilarious for me.
It has a 7.0 rating on IMDb. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, the premise of it is a young genius comes to this new college that Val Kilmer takes under his wing, and they develop a laser together that the professor is trying to sell to the government, essentially, to the military. Mm. So it's all about this, and it is a comedy, and it is hilarious, and I love it, and you should watch it. Those are our Desert Island movies. We're going to move into a section that we're dubbing right now Director's Chair.
Mm-hmm. So many new segments to unveil, so little yes. time.
So this is going to be Ray's baby with input from me, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And the first director he's going to tackle is David Fincher.
Yep. And, you know, it's not... We're really just going to kind of go through the films. I'm going to give him a general assessment and talk about how the director has sort of evolved and my opinion of them. And I think that this allows people to... When you look at the directors, you get to see a current in the work, and it allows you to kind of... To not just judge the films individually, but it gives you a perspective of what you might be able to expect, and also it gives another dimension to watching the film, because you're not just watching the film and allowing it to be presented to you and to unfold in front of you and in your brain, but you're also sort of appreciating someone's work, someone's portfolio, that they're demonstrating for you what they have helmed, mm-hmm. you know, and not to say, I mean, a lot of people work on a film. Mm-hmm. But following a director is a good example of the brain of the operation, ultimately, you mm-hmm. know, and watching how that brain travels across the sphere. And I picked David Fincher because he's simply, over the years, consistently my favorite director. I mean, he's done just a lot of films I really love above most other directors. And I'm not someone who's going to sit here and pull out a bunch of art house directors. I mean, I like independent directors, but... I don't care about... It's a blurry line. There are plenty of small-time directors who end up directing big movies. I mean, guy who just directed Jurassic World. Anyways, his first film was this little film
Colin
called...
Colin Trevorrow.
Directed this film called Safety Not Included... Or, Safety Not Guaranteed, about time travel. It was a cute little film, so well done, but very independent, obviously. And that was enough to make him, you know, the director for Jurassic World, the now third biggest movie. I mean, that's a big deal, you know?
And announced as Star Wars Episode IX's director.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that they travel this line now where they can be an art house director one day, and then the next year they're making a big Hollywood film. And so I don't buy this anymore that it's, you know, oh, you only can like these sorts of characters or these sorts of directors or whatever. And, you know... David Fincher has just made some amazing films. Now, we start off with Alien 3, which he's already said, you know, in interviews that he doesn't really count that film in his own, you know, list of accomplishments because he said the studio took over. That's an example of 20th Century Fox again. But oddly enough, from that point on, 20th Century Fox has seemed to maintain a good relationship with David Fincher. He seems to be one of the few directors that... Along with Darren Aronofsky, who they don't seem to fuck with too much.
Send him a lot of notes.
Yeah, they don't let they don't really, you know, try and destroy their films for whatever reason. other directors they do. But anyways, after Alien 3, David Fincher kind of set the tone for, or really set the bar for any future serial killer films when he made Seven with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. And to this day, I would argue that simply the best, if not the best, it's one of like the two or three best serial killer movies that you can't separate because they're so good. And oddly enough, I think the only other one that actually I would compare it to is another David Fincher film as well. So Seven, Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, Kevin Spacey, Gwyneth Paltrow, great twist ending, but it's so much more than a twist ending. It's just beautifully shot. We get an introduction into what we can expect to see for the rest of David Fincher's career, which is beautiful shots.
Mm-hmm.
Cinematography that's subtle, that's unlike any other director. You can see it almost unmistakably. If you didn't even know it was a David Fincher film, I argue you could pick it out. But Seven really set the bar for serial killer films from that point on. And then he came out with a movie that kind of was subtle in its release called The Game with Michael Douglas, Sean Penn. And in this movie, Michael Douglas plays a very rich gentleman who gets pulled into this game by a company called CRS, Consumer Recreation Services. And this game basically makes him think that his life is threatened, and that they're after his money, and it's supposed to like play with his mind and everything like that. But is it really a game, or are they actually trying to kill him and steal all of his money? Another great stylish film. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. I think it was on Netflix. I don't know if it's there anymore. And then David Fincher kind of blew it up again, and he made a film that eventually became a much bigger cult film than it ever was initially in theaters. But Brad Pitt returned and has been kind of his muse throughout his career, with Ed Norton, to make the cult classic Fight Club, about two gentlemen who start a sort of underground gang that starts to take over the world through sort of terrorist attacks. Anyways, an amazing philosophical journey through the 90s mind. And then he jumped into more suspense, meant like the Hitchcockian approach, and directed a film called Panic Room with Jodie Foster, where she has to hide from some men who break into her new apartment after she's getting divorced from her husband, who is having an affair and now living with the other woman. And she's got a daughter, and they buy this new townhome that has a panic room in it, and they end up using it. It's a great suspense film, and again, beautifully shot. So subtle, some of the camera effects in that one.
Yes.
And then he came back again, and with a very more serious and historical tone, made Zodiac, the film Jake Gyllenhaal about the Zodiac killer and the investigation by the author of the book Zodiac. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Robert Graysmith, I think, was his name. Anyways, another excellent film. Robert Downey Jr. is in it. It's spooky. It's really awesome to watch. Like, it's kind of crazy to watch, actually, the way that they solved and put the pieces together and the characters involved. And then after that, we have The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Now, this is the only film that I would say that Fincher kind of... I don't think it's his fault, necessarily. I think he kind of tried to go different direction than he had gone in the past. He made what I ultimately think is a beautiful film, Brad Pitt, about a man who was born old and ages backwards through life. It's based on a short story by
Stories by F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote this. My guess is maybe they just didn't have enough to make a full film out of, I don't know, but it's okay. I enjoyed it. It's beautiful. It's just like it's just missing things throughout. Like maybe they just it was not tightly edited enough or something. I'm not sure, but not my favorite of his, but still a great film. But then he returned to form with the Social Network, knows and also is the Facebook movie with Mark, not Mark Zuckerberg, but the guy who plays Mark Zuckerberg is Jesse Eisenberg.
Yes.
And it also has Justin Timberlake in it, Andrew Garfield. And that is a really fascinating movie. If you want to get motivated to do homework, just watch that movie, because, man, it just wants you to make yourself into a billionaire. And then David Fincher did an interesting thing. He made an adaptation of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He was the director of the American adaptation of it. And it had already been a very successful trilogy made on the very, very successful trilogy of books. But it was a Swedish trilogy. And
yeah,
although
Swedish
it was good, and it got attention in the U.S., well, the American producers thought they could make more here, and they got David Fincher involved and actually made a film that I personally think is far better than the Swedish version. I also personally feel that this might be just because, for whatever reason, serial killers are more fascinating to Americans and have been for a longer period of time. We
seem to have an obsession with them.
We have a richer history with them as well, and maybe the foreign audience doesn't, or the foreign directors don't know that as well. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. What I can say is that Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was, Rooney Mara was amazing in it, and so was Stellan Skarsgård was in it. And Daniel Craig. It was just a really good film, beautiful to look at. And then, even though that one was met with mixed reaction, what might be David Fincher's crowning jewel, his masterpiece, is Gone Girl. Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. Ben Affleck plays a man whose wife disappears and who it appears he may have murdered. The investigation is fueled and turns out some kind of weird is going on with the wife. Is she dead? Is something going on? I don't know. I'm not going to say too much for you because it's really the kind of movie you got to let unfold in front of you. It's just an amazing film. One of my favorites from last year. I would say probably my number one from last year. Now, there's rumors that Fincher's returning for The Girl Who Played with Fire, but we'll see about that. That's a sequel that supposedly Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara both signed on for, so we'll see how that goes.
I think you skipped over his most important work of all time.
Did I fucking really?
Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z. Suit and Tie. Image video.
This fucking guy. This fucking guy.
Had you going there for a minute. That was awesome. Alright, so coming up, next episode, we're going to talk about a fall-winter preview. Mm-hmm. We're going to hit all of October, all of November, all of December. Maybe go into January? We'll see. Where time allows. Right now, we're probably going to end right around Christmas. A couple films coming out on that day. We will have another new segment. Mm-hmm. We're dubbing the Unpopular Opinion. Mm-hmm. We'll have a couple more Desert Island movies. And I think we've decided on our next director. Mm-hmm. I think we're going with Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah.
And I will have a lot more input because I have seen most of the films that he has directed. Whereas with David Fincher, I've seen a few of them, which I could have had a little bit more input on. Seven and
Panic Room,
Fight Club. Obviously, I've seen those.
Yeah.
Great films. A few of the other films I haven't seen yet. So that'll be next episode. Uh-huh. If you have any comments, any suggestions, please let us know on Facebook or Twitter. We are at Stone Redbeard on Twitter. Same as well as on Facebook. You can download the podcast off Podomatic or find it on iTunes. Any other thoughts, Ray?
Just make sure you drop us a line. Let us know what you think about any new segments that we are adding. We're trying to keep it in an hour. Let us know if that works for you too, and hopefully like what we have to say. If you don't, please tell us about it. We'll be happy to read your disgusting comments on the air. Thanks a lot for listening, folks. My name is Redbeard.
I am Stone, and this has been Stone and Redbeard.